I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, if you're in the kitchen preparing the perfect 4th of July feast today, we have some tips on how to bake that favorite Independence Day dessert, cherry pie. But first, in honor of the 4th of July, Independence Day, we're bringing you a series of conversations with people from different walks of life about the meaning of freedom, from celebrated authors to a single mother rebuilding her life after years in prison. We're asking, what does freedom mean to you? We begin our series with Ariel Dorfman. Born in Argentina, raised in the U.S. and Chile, Dorfman is best known for his critically acclaimed drama, Death and the Maiden. Like much of his work, it addresses the horror of tyranny, and it draws on his own experience living under the repressive regime of Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet, from which he later fled into exile in the 1970s. Many of his friends and allies were tortured and killed during the coup. Ariel Dorfman is now a professor of literature and Latin American studies at Duke University, and he was kind enough to join us from their studios there. Professor, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Michelle. I'm so glad to be with you in this day of freedom.
Now, many people have the experience of your family. It's a wandering, a leave-taking. You were, as we've said, you were born in Argentina, family moved to Chile at one point, then you had to leave. And I wondered at what point you started to think about freedom. Were you raised with a concept of what freedom is or should be?
I think that I realized that very, very young. Because when you're a kid, you're a baby. I was 2 and a half when I had to leave Argentina, and then I was 12 and a half when I had to leave the States, and then I was a bit older when I had to leave Chile. You're put in a situation where you're not the one who decides that you have to leave, that your body that wants to stay in that country with your friends, with your family, with your extended family, with the weather that you know, with the ice cream that you know. There's a decision made by somebody else, generally your parents, that you've got to go. But of course, that decision is a decision which is pushed by the fact that there are generally dictatorial people or authoritarian people, people who are persecuting your family. So behind my wanderings, I've always had the impression that it's not because I wanted to wander, but that my lack of freedom was basically the fact that I couldn't even choose to stay in the country where I was born, then I couldn't stay in the country where I was brought up, then I couldn't stay in the country where I had my adolescence and my first loves and my mountains, because of things that other people were doing, not because of my own desire. So I think that it gave me an unquenchable thirst for being free in the sense of being able to determine on my own what my destiny should be. And that's very much related, of course, to having a voice of your own.
Well, is that what freedom means to you, having a voice?
Here's the contradiction with what freedom is that freedom itself is not for free. You have to pay for the freedom that you do. You have to struggle for that freedom. And not only you, but many invisible, anonymous, some known, mostly unknown people have fought for every last piece of freedom, every last free territory of our soul that we have in our bodies. The fact that women can vote, the fact that anybody can vote, the fact that there shouldn't be slaves, the fact that people with different genders have the possibility of being free to exercise their sexuality as they see fit. All those things were struggled for by an enormous amount of people, many of whom died in order to do that. Now, behind that, there's another concept, which is fear. So I think the opposite of freedom is fear. So if you were to ask me what freedom is, it is the capacity not to be afraid. I met a woman once who had been tortured terribly in Chile. And she told me that the way in which she had retained her sanity through that process had been in the worst moments of that torture, when they were waterboarding her, or when they were applying electricity to her genitals, or they were raping her. Terrible things were being done to her. She would try to repeat to herself poems. Poems by beautiful, wonderful Spanish poets like Neruda or García Lorca or Machado. You know, beautiful poems. Because she understood that if she had inside her that little tiny spark, that little tiny, you could say that field of freedom, it's a small one, then she had in some sense, she was free from them. Even if she was in the worst situation, she was tied down, she was chained, she was being subjected to all these things, but she wasn't their subject. They had not penetrated into the one thing that was hers, which was that consciousness of hers. And it's from there that freedom really exists. Now, it's not enough, of course. You have to follow through the freedom that you have in your mind with the freedom that you demand in the world. And it can't be freedom for yourself only. It's got to be freedom for other people as well.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're speaking to the Chilean-American playwright, novelist, and human rights activist Ariel Dorfman, and we're talking about what freedom means to him. Your work has dealt extensively, as we've discussed, with the issue of repression. And perhaps your best-known work, Death and the Maiden Talks, which was later turned into a movie, is about a woman who encounters and confronts the man who raped and tortured her when she was a political prisoner. Who she thinks did.
Right.
When she was a political prisoner. And I wanted to ask two questions. One is, first of all, do you think that our understanding and appreciation of freedom hinges upon struggle? Do we need to know struggle in order to truly appreciate freedom? And does it hinge upon, even if there is no struggle in our own lives, remembering the past struggles of others?
I would say that, first of all, struggle must come at some point. It doesn't have to start with struggle. You know, Kailash Satyarthi, who hardly anybody knows about, is a man from India who rescues little children from slavery. You know, there are perhaps 16 or 17 million children in India who are slaves, basically. They're either kidnapped from their parents or they go. They work with the little hands. They're very good at sewing many of those rugs that we love so much. And he spent his life rescuing them. This all started one day when he was 6 or 7 years old and he went to school for the first time. And when he went to school, on the doorstep, he saw a man with his son, who was the same age as Kailash, and the son was working. And he went to the man and he said, "Why is your son working? Why isn't he going to school?" And he said, "We're untouchables. We don't go to school. He can't go to school," right? And Kailash Satyarthi went to his teacher and he said, "Why is that man out there not letting his son go to school?" And he said, "Forget about that. You know, you're not here to ask these questions. You're here to learn." And he asked his mother. His mother wouldn't answer either. And Kailash Satyarthi therefore spent the rest of his life figuring out that that man, that boy, had to be free for Kailash Satyarthi also to be free. So the first realization, I think, comes from compassion. It comes from a sense of injustice either done to you or done to somebody else that you're witnessing, or something that you've learned about from the past. And I think we gather great inspiration from the storm of the past, from what people have done. And when you think about that, you have to think that they're still doing it in some sense. In the sense that today, if in the United States, we have, for instance, an autonomous judicial system, it's because many people fought for that. If today we don't have segregation, if we have, I mean, we have an African-American president or African-American origin, right? It's because many, many people stood up. They stood up in Selma. They marched in Alabama. They marched in Mississippi. I mean, many things happened. And some of those people were martyred, as we know. Many of those people were killed. Now, it's that freedom from fear, which I think is the most important thing of all, because for there to be freedom, you also have to think about the fact there are many who don't want freedom or who feel that their privileges are taken away if you're free. So one man's freedom will be taking away something from somebody else. And in that sense, I think that struggle must come at some point. But the struggle doesn't have to be always heroic. It can be small.
Professor Dorfman, I don't know if you'd indulge us, but you teach students at Duke.
I do.
Who come from all over the world. Many of them are privileged, and they're all privileged in the sense of they're free to pursue their studies at this point in their lives.
They're even free to take my own classes.
To take your class, which is not the case in all parts of the world.
Correct.
I wanted to ask if you feel that they have an appreciation of freedom, and what do you think you do in the course of your work with them to help them to do so?
Well, you know, the first thing I try to do in the classroom is to say, you have to be able to tell exactly what you feel about everything. There's no faking it in the classroom, as in love. There's no faking it. There shouldn't be any faking it, you know. So I want them to be free. In other words, I want precisely to open up spaces of freedom in the classroom. They can say anything they want to me as long as it's in a respectful way, a way in which it's a dialogue with me. But there are no forbidden ideas. There is nothing forbidden in my class. You know, we have spaces of absolute freedom in certain places. I will tell you, art is a space of almost absolute freedom. That's why I love music so much. I love theater so much. I love literature. I love plastic painting. In other words, inside the aesthetic, you are absolutely free to decide what you want, which character you love, who you don't like, etc. You know, so I would like to extend the territory of the freedom of art to the territory of intellectual inquiry and discussion.
Finally, Professor Dorfman, as we celebrate this Independence Day, what is it that we can do absent the kind of dire circumstances that you and your peers experience, that some people are living in today? And of course, we've seen just in recent days that people who are struggling for freedom in other places around the world. But absent those extreme circumstances that you're living in yourself, what would you want people to do to appreciate, to celebrate their own freedom?
I would like people to think those who are struggling for freedom outside the United States are also struggling for our freedom. It is one struggle. And therefore, we cannot enjoy whatever liberties we have, and they're insufficient. Even in this country, they're insufficient. We cannot enjoy them if we feel that there is somebody in the world who is not enjoying the same sort of freedom. And therefore, our sense that we have to understand that this is one indivisible humanity. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be practical. That doesn't mean we shouldn't think about not intervening necessarily. But there are ways in which we can struggle. And I think, once again, it is the freedom from fear, which is the most important of all the freedoms.
Ariel Dorfman is the author of Death and the Maiden, among many other works. He teaches literature and Latin American studies at Duke University, where he's a professor. He was kind enough to join us from their studios there. Thank you so much for speaking with us, and happy Independence Day.
It's always a pleasure.